You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 306. This is Features Editor John Gentile. This is Punk News Podcast number 306. 306 is a number that has recurred throughout my life many times for various reasons. It's a number that keeps popping up. Who knows why? I'm here with one of the main man, the guy that calls the shots. I'm here with Managing Editor Adam White. Managing Editor Adam White, I saw your favorite band this past week.
My favorite band? Oh, boy. Oh, my favorite band.
Constantine's? Favorite
band. No, they're not together. It's not the Clash because they're half dead.
He's Canadian. Must be the Tragically Hip.
Oh, don't joke about Tragically Hip right now. There's legitimate tragedy involved there. Do you guys know about that? I'm cutting John off.
The guy's got like brain cancer. He's like, I've got brain cancer. I'm just going to tour for like the last 6 months of my life or something like that.
Yeah, and the final tour that they're doing, like they have like one hometown show that is going to be like the final show, and it is now going to be apparently like live broadcast across the country. Like the CBC, like our national broadcaster, I'm pretty sure they're just going to like stream it live on the internet and on their TV and everything. It's like the whole country is going to collectively watch this concert.
So my poking fun at Canada for being so in love with the Tragically Hip is actually being confirmed by how much, you know, they're actually confirming how much they love the Tragically Hip.
Dude,
so.
that's brutal. Like the doctor, like, yeah, you've got 6 months to live, 12 months to live.
Yeah.
And knowing like this is it. Oh my God, that's brutal. Like, there's no hope there, you know?
If I only had 6 months to live, I'd want to spend as much of it as possible sitting in front of my computer with you guys. I
just want you to know. Well, then that makes the news we have to break for you so much easier, Tom.
yeah, exactly.
John, what's my favorite band? Did you see them? Is it Flag?
Well, that's my favorite band, and I saw Flag, and let me tell you, people, Flag was amazing. Adam White, I wasn't exactly sure. Did you think Flag was very good or amazing when you saw them?
Oh, I thought Flag was. I would put them in the amazing category. I mean, a lot of it might have been like me being a little bit starstruck to kind of like be in the room with those guys. So I don't know if I was judging it based on like whatever abstract criteria that people actually judge musical performances on. Like that wasn't really at play. Like I had a lot of fun. It was awesome. I was excited to see them, so it kind of ticked all those boxes.
Okay. Well,
you know, was it high art? Did it break new ground in the human in the sphere of, you know, human expression? I don't fucking know. But
well, see, for me, it did break new. I mean, honestly, people, I've said before, I probably won't be able to say it again. I think it might be the end for Flag. They've got a couple of dates left. If you get a chance to see him, Flag was amazing. It's how rare is it that like a band is really as good as you hope they will be, you know, that you've been dreaming of for 20 years, for 15 years, same as Amoebix. I saw Flag again for the fourth time. Amazing, absolutely amazing. But opening for Flag was a band called The Dirty Nil.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, I thought you liked that band.
I love that band.
Oh, okay. Well, let me tell you, I'm not going to lie and say the Dirty Nil is my very favorite band of all time. However, Adam White is speaking the truth. They are a great, great, great live band. Their songs are very hooky, almost mainstream kind of songs, although a little dirty, not lyrically, but sonically. And they've got a phenomenal stage presence. And I was watching that, and I'm like, why isn't this band huge? Like, I don't know why Beach Slang is as big as Beach Slang is, and the Dirty Nil is kind of a tiny band. Like, Adam White, they are really good live, and they really do have, I don't want to say a rock star persona, but they have a confident, fully formed stage presence and thing that they're doing.
Oh yeah, and I mean like Luke, their singer guitar player. He's been a,
he's,
He's been working that stage presence. Like, he does, like, what you probably saw him do on a bigger stage is the kind of thing that he would do playing, like, a dive bar. And in a dive bar, it was always, like, it always seemed more tongue-in-cheek because, you know, he'd be doing all these, like, crazy, like, weird, slinky, you know, rock lead singer moves that don't, you would not normally see a frontman of, like, a, what's obsessively a punk band do these days, because, you know, everyone's way too cool to actually, like, you know, dance around and put on a show. So, you know, I've seen him do that in tiny, tiny clubs for years, and it's always kind of funny there, because you're like, you know, no one like mugs around this much on a dive bar stage, but he was doing it. But then seeing him do it on, like, a real, you know, actual venue stage, well, you know, that looks more like what you'd expect.
You know what? I just listened to Higher Power. I just listened to the Dirty Nil album today. I'm not just saying that to suck up to Adam. I really did. It's excellent.
Well, listen, people, that's Tom Trauma right there. Tom Trauma, reviews writer. He's a fan of the Dirty Nil, too. Tom, why do you think the Dirty Nil aren't big? Like, they seem like they should be a really big band. Why are they not that big?
They're awfully garagey. I don't know that they have as much commercial potential as you think. I mean, there's some hooks there, definitely, but I don't listen to them and go, wow, this should be the next Offspring or something. I saw Dirty Nil open for you know, one of our mutual favorite bands, John Restorations. So, you know, it makes them look extra exciting.
I would think they should be huge with their presence and with their type of song that they play.
They're too nasty. They're too nasty sounding.
Well, I mean, their bass player Dave used to have a big Freddie Mercury mustache, and I think that shaving that was a mistake, and it's going to cost them from a career standpoint.
The main guy, the singer.
Interesting theory.
The singer, he's a unique looking guy, though, isn't he?
He looks like a big, tall, young Jimmy Fallon. He's got a big moon face like Jimmy Fallon.
No, see, I thought he had a skinny face.
Oh, I'm not saying it's like fat. It's just he's got a big, open face. Like, he reminds me of Jimmy Fallon, like a young Jimmy Fallon.
Adam, like, do you think he's unique looking?
Yeah, I mean, like, if you saw him, he was probably wearing a like a blue shirt with white stars on it. That is his only shirt. I've actually once seen him not play in a Stars shirt, and it was very off-putting. I felt like he dropped the facade a little bit, and I didn't like that.
I would not be surprised if the Dirty Nil become huge, but we'll have to.
I don't think they're going to be huge, but I wouldn't be surprised if that record ends up on a lot of year-end lists.
I'm going to read some mail. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And this is from Dan. Dan wrote in last week, and he said, hi, I just started last week's podcast, and I heard John read my email. Alex and Greg, who's Alex? Alex. Alex.
We have an Alex, but he's not a podcaster. I don't know.
Alex and Greg seemed a little dumbfounded. Maybe he means Adam? Alex and Greg seemed a little dumbfounded by my run the podcast through mono comment. They had questions about what I meant that I think I actually answered in my original email, but you probably edited for time. I think the issue I was making about happens pretty infrequently, mostly when you have a lot of people on the same show. Some voices will be stronger in one channel than the other. Maybe I'm just crazy. I definitely wasn't saying that you should mono the songs, just the discussions. But then again, I didn't even think it was that big of a deal, so I already sounded pretty crazy to bringing it up with to begin with. However, I think my whole point might be moot, because I recently discovered that many smartphones have a mono setting in their accessibility or handicap settings. It works well for spoken word, and it might be good for your listener, Evan, who couldn't listen to the first Ramones record with two earbuds on. Although I haven't found it to be a perfect fix all since, depending on the song's mix, it has made some music sound like it was happening inches away from my head. Anyway, I've been effectively scared from ever writing you again unless it is strongly positive or complimentary. From Dan. And I'm going to say, Dan, listen, don't listen to Greg. Don't get scared off by Greg. We definitely won critical mail. We read a very critical letter last week. And we always say, you know, oh, write us critical mail, and then people do it. We trash talk them. But listen, Greg freaks out when anybody even comments on the audio aspect whatsoever, so don't take that personally. Please feel free to give us your honest opinion. We don't want this to be a back-rubbing channel. You know, tell us what you like, tell us what you don't like, and most importantly, thanks for listening. Speaking of mail from last week, we had a fellow say, you guys don't do enough actual punk Old School Punk on the Punk News Podcast. Well, I got a cold this week, and I wish I didn't, because I'm about to do a diatribe, but I'm going to give you, the listener, $1,000 advice. I'm going to give the listeners what they would have to pay a PR person $1,000 or more to learn. And so, what could my advice possibly be? Somebody guess why I blow my nose.
Is this rhetorical?
You're cold, or you developed a cocaine habit?
Okay, good guesses, but you're both wrong.
Here, those are both my guesses, so I'm actually wrong twice, but okay.
Here is how you pitch a song to get featured at Punk News or any other website. It's almost always the same. And this is what, at Punk News, for whatever reason, the PR companies that pitch us are usually either emo bands, indie bands, or screamo bands. I don't know why that type of genre has better PR people, but they just do. Adam or Tom, do you have any idea why those types of bands usually have better or more active PR than punk rock or heavy metal or hardcore?
Well, I think they probably sell better. I wouldn't say that they're better than metal. I've got a couple of metal contacts, and they are relentlessly
actually, that's true. Stuff out. Metal is relentless, that's true.
But I don't think punk has a budget, quite honestly. That's the impression I get. Everybody does everything themselves. It's just the nature of the beast and the whole DIY thing, and sometimes it serves them well, and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, listen, you don't need a PR person to pitch a review or to pitch a feature to any publication. I've written some for some very large publications, and they don't necessarily care if you don't have a PR person. Having a PR person is not a prerequisite. That being said, what a PR person can get you is contacts. So a PR person has contacts, so maybe they have an avenue in a certain publications. But if you want to get something featured at Punk News or any other website, here's how you send a pitch. For you say, hello, I want to pitch you the new video for our band. Our band is called the Electric Bananas. We play hardcore and ska. It's unique because all our songs are about St. Bernards. Our new album comes out on August 23. Check it out below. And then you always have to have three things ready. You always want to have an embed code ready. You always want to have a band pick ready. And you always want to have a pre-order link ready. If you want to give more detail, you can, but you put that below the initial pitch. If you send somebody a wall of text, then they're not going to read it. That being so it's always three things that you want to have ready, and you want to have them ready when you send the pitch on over. You want to have your embed code ready, a band pick ready, and you want to have your pre-order link ready. Now, sometimes I'll run premieres because even if they don't have that format, but that's only because it's something that I personally am really interested in. Like if someone says, hey, John, I've got a Doctor Who themed band here, then I'm probably going to do that feature just because I think Doctor Who's cool. But that's just because I'm really into Doctor Who or whatever. And if I get somebody pitches like, hey, John, you know, we're an emo band from Sheboygan, and then I get a wall of text, I might not even read it or send it over for review. Well, I mean, I send everything over for review, but people aren't likely to pick it up just because you have to show why you're special, what you do differently than other people in a very short amount of time. We're talking three sentences, four sentences. If you want to have more information, that's fine, but put it below the initial intro four sentences or so. What I was going to say, I guess that's pretty much all I had to say. I mean, that's $1,000 advice for you. This is how you get a pitch in. This is how you get something into a publication. So like I say, send us, you know, punk rock stuff. Oh, and here's the other thing, though. And this is a problem that punk bands often have that other bands don't have. Don't pull shady business. You know, if you're going to do a premiere, it has to be brand new. It can't be something you put out 3 months ago or a year ago. Don't send me something you put out a year ago and say, hey, do you want to debut our new song? And it's already been public. It has to be something that hasn't been public before. Also, don't lie and say, oh, but we haven't put it out yet, and you have put it out yet, or don't be completely honest, because let me tell you, every single time somebody's shady, it comes up and leaves a bad taste in the publication's mouth. And even if the publication doesn't catch it, one of the readers will definitely catch it because they love the bustle of the publication. So if you're shady, it never works out in your favor. So just be straight up honest. If you don't have something ready, wait till you have something ready, then send a pitch in. Adam White, I don't know if you got a comment on that or anything.
This is an interesting argument because I've often thought about what would work better for me as the person on the receiving end of these. And I mean, I've been on the receiving end of them for like over 10 years now. And a lot of the time, yeah, the wall of text is really tough because it's, if you get too many of them, it's just, you just become completely completely numb to it. The point that you made there about the embed code and everything, that's actually really good. And if there's any if there's anything that would really make me easier from the person putting content onto a website, is if you're giving me that info in a way that is going to make it, you know, as easy as possible for me to do my job. So like what I also like to see is like for tour dates, for example, like I would like my kingdom for a publicist that comes up with a way to just give us tour dates in a way that is easy for us to take and digest and to put onto a site. Because if you think about tour dates are always something that if you look at punk news in the way that we do tour dates, we put them in a table. So you can, you know, there's alternate color stripes and columns and headings, and it's a fucking table, so you can read it. When we get tour dates a lot, we'll get tour dates from someone that'll be like just a text list, and it'll just be like date hyphen venue hyphen maybe the city hyphen maybe not the city, like irregular data. Or then we'll get these tour dates from people where they'll have like, you know, oh, if we put like three asterisks next to this tour date, then that means we're this band is opening for us. But if we put an ampersand there, it means this. But if we put a percent sign but not an ampersand, then it means this. And there's all these fucking hieroglyphics that they work into sharing a tour date with you. So for me to take that and to make it into a properly formatted HTML table is hard. And, you know, we've seen worse than that, where someone will send, like a JPEG, where
it's
like,
the worst.
Here's all of our tour dates that you can't even copy and paste, just retype them, fuck you. That's, we get those kind of things, too. So, like, all of those things make it slightly harder for us to do what we do. And given, again, you have to know the kind of publication that you're trying to pitch to. So if you're talking about punk news, given that no one actually works for punk news and no one gets paid to do anything on punk news, there is far less incentive for anyone to help you. Because if you're going to make their lives slightly difficult, chances are they're going to go watch the next episode of Doctor Who instead of actually writing the thing about your band. John, can we just talk about Doctor Who from now
on? Yeah, man. Who's your favorite Doctor?
I really like Capaldi, but I don't know. I
Tom Baker. Tom Baker, no question. Tom
I was
Baker.
Say, I only know up to the guy after Tom Baker, the blonde guy. That's as far as I go on it. So
let me tell you why.
I never left the 80s with Doctor Who.
I mean, the show was rough when it came back, like production values wise sometimes. But I really liked Eccleston as far as just the attitude of it.
I like Matt Smith. I thought Matt Smith was pretty good.
I grew to like Matt Smith, but he was goofy. Like he was goofy. He was a little bit too goofy and cute for me at first.
You see, here's why I like Tom Baker, and I think he's the only Doctor that does this. The idea of the Doctor is that he's super, super smart, and he's not human, even though he looks human. And so, if you watch Tom Baker, this is the mastery of Tom Baker, is, you know, sometimes he'll talk to the people normally or whatever, and sometimes he'll ignore them when he's working on something, but this is my favorite thing that Tom Baker does, and only Tom Baker does, is, like, while the show's happening, like, he'll, like, pick up something and, like, laugh at it, or he'll, like, study something that has nothing to do with anything, like, doesn't have anything to do with the plot whatsoever, or he'll just start cracking up at something. And it's implied, if you really focus, that the Doctor is so smart that he's perceiving things that none of the other characters can perceive because he's so much smarter. So it implies that the Doctor has a greater understanding of the situation than anybody else, which that's what I love about Tom Baker. And also, sometimes he's funny, sometimes he's funny, sometimes he's petty, sometimes he's angry, sometimes he's generous. He's a very fickle Doctor, which is what makes him my favorite. And he's got the scarf, which is cool.
The scarf is cool. All right, this show should just become about
that. Really gone off the rails today, fellas.
Off the rails? We're on the rails for the first time in 306 episodes.
You think so?
Listen.
So it's basically you've been working towards this goal to make this all Doctor Who all the
Doctor
time.
Doctor Who. Listen, let's bring it back. Let's remember our roots. Tom Trauma. This is apropos of nothing, but Tom Trauma let it slip that he's got a very interesting Madball story. It's apropos of nothing whatsoever, but Tom, I've got to hear this story. This just sounds like a great story.
Well, the reason it came up was because, you know, Madball's touring for the first time in a long time. And so a conversation among our loyal readers was that these guys will actually fight. Like they are super street. So I was telling this story. I saw Madball. I only saw him one time, but they were actually opening for the newly reformed Misfits. You know, every town has, I always say every town has a CBGBs. I mean, it might not be as cool as CBGBs, but every town has one that's sort of the early music scene germinated it. And in Grand Rapids, there was a place called the Reptile House. And this place was small and it stank. And the beers were like a dollar and you didn't really necessarily have to be 21 to drink them. But it was just this little dive place. And the Misfits were touring behind what had to be Famous Monsters. That was their first one, I believe, after they got Michael Graves as the singer. And yeah, Madball happened to be opening for him in this tiny little club. And this was a huge social event for the Grand Rapids punks of the time. You know, all 200 of us were packed into this dive. And there was a little all ages room next door to this club because the crowd kind of spilled over into it. But anyway, the Reform Misfits were there, and Jerry and Doyle were in this back room. And they're, in their defense, they're super nice guys and super easily approachable.
Oh, I define that to be, I interviewed Doyle once. He was cool, but he was not nice.
Yeah, Doyle, okay, you're right. Doyle, especially lately, has taken on that weird persona. But back in this era, so I'm thinking it was 96. And of course, there was I have no ticket stubs for anything at most of the clubs before, you know, like 2000. Because everything was just $5 at the door, $10 at the door. So the owner could just go get some Coke and a hooker down the street because the clubs are always in the worst neighborhood in town. But Doyle and Jerry only were literally lifting weights before the show, like in this room with everyone watching them, just lifting weights. But Freddie from Madball,
did they bring weights with them?
Had weights with them. Yes, they were lifting weights. It's as ridiculous as it sounds. But anyway, that's not even my main point. So of course they had just reformed, right? So they had this gigantic stage setup. I mean, this huge drum set that has like an entire like elk skeleton attached to it or something. And they have these giant guitars with these big bones hanging off them. And they were the headliner. So they had all their stuff set up on the stage. And there was literally like 2 feet in the front of the stage for the other bands. And Freddie was not having any of it. And despite the fact that he was young, this is 20 years ago. He was probably in his early 20s. He was a skinny little guy. But the point of the whole discussion we were having on the site was that these guys are not afraid to fight, and little Freddie was literally bitching at the Misfits from the stage, and actually said what did he call them, a bunch of Misfits, the you Misfits pussies or something like that. And it was just the these guys are fearless. Don't mess with them. Don't mess with Madball. If they're not afraid of Jerry only, they ain't afraid of you.
I mean, honestly.
But I'll tell you, it was such a great show, John. The thing that's gotten lost, because Madball's kind of become a punchline around these parts, is that Madball was really a great hardcore band for a while.
They're a punchline that'll punch you back.
Put out a couple of great albums, and we're just, you know, I mean, there is like Agnostic Front, you know, Cro-Mags, and then there's like the second tier, you know, your Madballs and War Zones and stuff like that. But they were a great band, and that was a great, great show.
You know,
and like 1,000 people now will tell you they were there, but the club wouldn't hold more than 200, so most of them are lying.
I have more respect for Freddie Madball because of that. I mean, I interviewed Freddie Madball once, and actually he seemed nice enough, so I can't really say anything bad about Freddie Madball. But I love how he's willing to fight the Misfits at the Misfits' own show. Like, he really is the guy he says he is in his songs.
And I talked to my brother about it, and I don't remember I couldn't remember the exact words. I just remember him bitching about it. But my brother swears that he called them fucking Misfits faggots or something like that. Now, granted, that was 20 years ago. I know it wasn't right then. It's not right now. But that's how fearless this guy was. And
I like it. Like, I'm Freddie Madball. I've been in hardcore for 35 years. How old are you? 27. You know what I mean?
He was probably more like 23. No, I bet he's not any older than I am. But you know, he had like the drummer from Agnostic Front. I don't know if he still is the drummer for Madball, but he had a lot of credibility. No, he had an Agnostic Front tattoo in his neck. He's all right.
He's literally been singing in hardcore bands since he was 11. I mean, that's pretty much. So
he like it's like him and was the bass player from the Cro-Mags at Harley.
Harley?
No, him and Harley Flanagan. They're like as real as it gets. You know, like they've literally been doing it since they were teenagers or preteens, even 12.
We'll talk about this later. Harley Flanagan has an insane backstory that people don't even know about. We'll talk about that some other time, though.
I know he played drums. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. But anyway, yeah, Madball. Mad respect for Madball. And you want me to spin a tune, John?
The
you want to segue into that, or you want to go do something else?
Give it a spin, Tom. Give it a spin.
Well, we just finished up our 20-year retro reviews, which everybody loves, and it was great fun. But I just went into my basement, and I grabbed Madball, demonstrating my style, and I happened to notice that that came out in 1996, and I think I consider this their best album. I'm not a Madball completist or anything, but I have a couple of their albums, and they did kick the Misfits' ass that night, by the way. I would love to spin the title track from their 1996 album, Demonstrating My Style.
Demonstrate my style. Let them be known. Demonstrate my style. I'm not alone. Follow the path of no one else. So if I be true to myself, I speak my mind from deep inside. People change, not staying true to my ways. All across my life, I carry the name. Demonstrate my style. Let that be known. Demonstrate my style. We're not alone. Give respect where respect is due. To those who know what we've been through. We can all relate in our own way. The years pass and people change, but I'm staying true to my way. All across my life, I carry the name. To those who put us down, we won't see you around, 'cause you're too scared of me. To those who love the sound, you know what we're about. You get respect from me.
And we are back, and that was Madball demonstrating their style. Adam White, we can't even get a podcast started without bullshitting for a half hour anymore. Is that good or is that bad? We used to jump right into the news right away.
John, that is a good thing in my mind.
I think part of it is like the three of us are like the old crew.
Tom, you didn't listen to last week's podcast, did you, Tom?
I'm the one man old crew. No, I'm a few behind. I think I'm three behind. But anyway,
you should listen to last week's podcast, Tom.
All right, do you guys do the same thing? All right,
no,
whippersnapper Ricky.
No, we got yelled at. So, anyways, listen. Speaking of old dudes, Chuck Reagan and Chris Wallace, they're writing new Hot Water Music tunes. This will be their first album since 2012's whatever it was called. The punk community is excited. Cistern, there you go.
Exister.
Yeah, whatever.
Exister.
The punk community is excited because it does not get more orgcore than Hot Water Music. Although I didn't even know this because I'm not a huge fan. A lot of people thought Exister was actually quite lackluster. Adam White, are you excited? Is this age of music over? Or is Hot Water Music, will they always ignite the flame of the beard and flannel, PBR, and jort shorts?
Wow, that was way more dismissive than I thought you needed to be there. I like Hot Water Music. Hot Water Music is one of the bands that I am, you know, there are definitely times in my life where they don't excite me to the degree that I wish they would. But I have nothing but love and respect. And if you had to go and force me to get a band tattoo like tomorrow, they would be a pretty safe bet where I'm not going to regret it later. So yeah, I'm cool on Hot Water Music entirely. Exister, which is not Cistern or whatever the hell you said, which was their last album and their first album that they
Cistern
had.
Cistern would
on
be
Rise.
A good name for an album too, though.
It would. Anyways, I think that the the opinion that you voiced that people have of it was pretty much mine. It was fine, but it was very much not one that I thought about a heck of a lot after I had heard it. It suffered a little bit from that latter day journeyman band syndrome, where, you know, a band's been together for so long and their sound is so nailed down that, you know, they're playing what they know, and it's not necessarily going to shock or surprise you or anything like that, and it's perfectly good. It's just not, it's not as vital as it once was when it was new. And, you know, like that happens to everyone. I mean, that happens to the Bouncing Souls sound like that. Bad Religion sounded like that for years before they kind of managed to, you know, reinvent themselves. So I got a little bit of that from Exister. That said, I had forgotten much of that record in the lead up to this show. Actually, while I was giving my kids baths, I had it playing on my phone just so I could refamiliarize myself with it. And there's a lot of songs I actually do recall.
It's a pretty good record.
Yeah, you know what?
You might be surprised to know I'm not the world's biggest Hot Water Music fan. I don't know their whole catalog by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it was pretty damn solid. Of all the bands that went to Rise Records to die, I thought their record was the best.
No, yeah. So that was my opinion after playing it from my phone while bathing children. Was I'm like, oh hey, I like this a lot more
experience than listening to it from your phone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right, with someone with kids screaming at me, that's the best way to listen to anything.
splashing.
Yeah. No, I liked a lot of the songs on there a lot more than I would have recalled had I not just gone and listened to it right now. Hot Water Music, for me, my era of them is the Epitaph era. I mean, this is a band that has such a long history that, you know, by the time that they signed to Epitaph and started releasing records there, the band was already, like they had a fan base that was long in the tooth. Like, there were there are people that felt betrayed when they left No Idea and stopped playing that kind of that early emo stuff that they were doing and started playing like kind of straight up punk rock. You know, a lot of people were rubbed the wrong way by that, but like not me, because I would prefer them playing punk rock to playing, the stuff that they were playing before that in a lot of the cases. So, you know, albums like what was it, Caution, and what was the one before that? A Flight and a Crash. Like, those two records are sort of like my Hot Water Music records. Like, that was the sweet spot for me. And they haven't really deviated too much from that with where they are on Exister right now. So, you know, I'm cool to hear this. I want to hear this. I'm excited. I'm maybe not excited. I'm hopeful. John, you wanted more ire. I don't have any ire for you.
No, I don't have any ire for Hot Water Music. It's just not a band that I'm that interested in. Well, we've had this argument many times. Let's skip the argument. Let's get into something that I do want to argue about. I've got a lot of opinions on this. Henry Rollins, punk musician, singer for SOA, singer for Black Flag, singer for Wartime, singer for the Rollins Band, poet, novelist, public speaker. He is now actor. He is now part of the recent Calvin Klein campaign. The campaign features the line, "I blank in my Calvins." And Henry's is a little grammatically incorrect, but it's a picture of Henry in Calvin Klein clothes, presumably. And it says, "I am fanatic in my Calvins." And other musicians featured in this same campaign is Justin Bieber, and a lot of actors are famous featured in this campaign as well. There's actually also a TV spot that Henry's in for about a second and a half. So he's in the print ad, and he's also in the TV spot. One interesting thing to point out, that one of the commenters pointed out, he was in a Gap ad in the late 80s. I didn't even know this. And it's actually almost the same picture, to tell you the truth. So I've got a lot of opinions on this. I'll throw this to Tom and Adam first, and then I'll come in with my opinion. Tom, is this cool? Is this a sellout? Is this not a sellout? Is this Henry making a square buck? What is this?
Oh, I absolutely think it's Henry making a square buck. The fact of the matter is, he hasn't played music.
Is that a phrase, a square buck? Did I just make that up? A square buck?
I don't know. They're more rectangular, really, than square. But anyway, Henry has, you know, he hasn't been like a punk rock singer for how many years now? He's kind of a guy who's made his living doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and I'm not particularly shocked or put off by it. I mean, if he was like in the reformed version of Black Flag and he was doing it, I think it would draw some, you know, it might bring up some other issues. But the fact of the matter is, he's just kind of like a working, you know, working actor, a working entertainer. Take the money and run, Hank.
I'm have a hard time being, you know, critical of Henry for doing this, if only because
you can't stay mad at Henry Rollins.
No, and I mean, and if speaking of people who will fight you, like he might. But he's outside of music, the dude has had a career as a, you know, quote unquote celebrity, in that he's been in movies, he's hosted TV shows, he has, you know, he's written books, he's, you know, he's not trying to keep it real while still playing with his band in your you know, shed. So I guess go be in a fucking Calvin Klein ad, I guess. Like, it doesn't really affect me one way or another, and I'm not going to expend too much thought worrying about how Henry Rollins gets paid.
I got to give this two thumbs down. I think this is a case of what I would call Washington D.C. passive aggressiveness and hypocritical actions. I kind of have the same grudge against Henry Rollins as I do Ian McKay, and actually I respect them quite a bit as artists, although I think they're not quite what people say they are, and I think they both have carefully manufactured images. I was just listening to that Steve Albini Ian McKay interview, and I got the same kind of vibe. And there was actually one exact point where I still do have respect for Henry Rollins, but there was one exact point where I lost probably 30% of my respect for Henry Rollins, and I'm sure he doesn't care, but I care. And back in December 2013, Henry Rollins did an interview with Rolling Stone. The interview was with Mike Ayers, one of the best writers, music journalists there is. Mike Ayers, fantastic writer, fantastic interviewer. And at the end of the interview, he said, this is Mike Ayers asking Henry Rollins, another thing that was going on this year was so much drama with Black Flag. Did you follow that? And here's what Henry said. I know what I read. The Flag guys, they're doing their thing, I guess. Kids were writing me, hey, I can't wait to see you next week in Brisbane. I wrote them back, I'm not going to be there. I'm in Toronto. And they went, oh, you're not in the band? I'm like, absolutely not. They were saying, wow, the place was kind of half full, and 30 minutes of the set, it was a quarter full. People were running out angry that they're not going to get their $30 back. And so I've seen neither entity, Black Flag or Flag. I'm not interested in the past unless it's a re-release of a record. I'm not interested in my own past that much, but I've heard that the Flag thing is pretty powerful. I've never seen it, but I know people whose opinions I respect who went. And they said it was solid. It is what it is. Men in their 50s playing 30-year-old music. But as far as the politic of 50s. It all, what's going on with all those people, I stayed well away from it. I'm looking forward to 2014 and what will come. So Henry's taking kind of a high and mighty stance as towards Flag, you know. I think that's very hypocritical. Number one, what did Henry Rollins do in 2006? No, I'm sorry, 2006. Or, no, 2003.
2003, Henry Rollins.
He toured on behalf of the West Memphis Three as the Rollins band.
Yeah, for that Rise Above record.
And that's great cause. It's wonderful that he did that. But he's insulting Keith Morris and the rest of the Flag guys for doing exactly what he did 10 years prior, but somehow it's okay for him to do that, you know? And I think that's complete bullshit, because Keith Morris has, in social media and other platforms, whenever anybody says anything bad about Henry Rollins, Keith Morris jumps to Henry Rollins' defense and says, Henry Rollins is my friend. Henry Rollins is a good guy. But upon being asked a question, a non-provoking question, Henry, what do you think of Flag? Henry shits all over Flag. He says, well, it's old men playing 30-year-old music. I don't even know about it that much. If Henry Rollins had any sense of loyalty to him, any sort of respect for Keith Morris or any of the Flag guys, he could say, oh, I've heard it's pretty good. I haven't seen it. I'm doing my own thing, but it's cool that they're doing it. I mean, it would have been so easy for him to take the high road, but instead he takes the low jabs. You know, oh, it's 50-year-old man playing 30-year-old music. It is what it is. He could have kept his mouth shut. He could have been slightly positive. But instead he does what I call the Washington, D.C. thing and be, quote, completely honest, and instead spit at your friends. You take jabs at your so-called friends, and basically be nasty to people that have supported you previously. I think that's lame. But all right, if that's what Henry wants to be, that's what Henry wants to be.
John, what's that have to do with Calvin Klein?
here's what that has to do. Henry Rollins, who took the high and mighty high road, well, I'm not interested in, you know, making money off Black Flag, yada, yada, yada. Oh, but it's okay for him to make money off sweatshop labor pants? I mean, really? Who's the more noble actor in this situation? The band playing music that they wrote or had a part in writing, or the guy making money off labor by 8-year-old children in China, in Sri Lanka, in Ecuador? I mean, really? It is a personal grudge of mine. I can't stand sweatshop clothes. I hate all that kind of stuff. But here's Henry, and it would be different if Henry Rollins didn't take the high and mighty road. I remember when Iggy Pop got, you know, shit for doing Lust for Life in a Cadillac commercial. Well, listen, Iggy Pop needs money. He's a fantastic guy. I'm glad he got that money. But here's Henry Rollins acting how he's all, you know, high and mighty and how he doesn't do things for money and whatnot, you know, or he's got more respect or he's on to something. And here he is shilling himself out for one of the world's largest users of child labor. Unconscionable, that's what I think. I still like Henry Rollins. I think he's a great artist, but I think he's a hypocrite, and I think he's a little bit of a phony, and I don't think he really represents what a lot of people think he represents. That being said, as an artist, it's not my position to judge him as a person. I think he makes some great art, but I think he's a little bit of a phony.
John, are you going to see Henry do a spoken word tour this year?
I might. I've never seen it. I might go to see him for the first time.
You see, I was thinking about it. I haven't either. And I don't necessarily disagree with what you said, but I'm like, that said, I kind of want to go see him talk.
Well, like I said, I think he's a great artist. He's got lots of interesting things to say. But, you know, I see this a lot with DC bands, DC people, and Midwest people. They're all high and mighty, and they never pass up an opportunity to smash at their friends, which I can never understand. Like, why would you attack your friends? You know, but they love doing it. I don't. Ian MacKay does the same thing. So, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't know. So, John.
Well, he's right. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'll
go ahead, Adam.
I mean, switch gears here, because we've had a couple stories that have been we've had a meh, and then we've had one that got you mad. This one make you happy, I think.
This will, yes. Go ahead, Adam. Let's hear about this. I'm very excited for this.
Oh, okay. So these are two. I have to pull up the story here, so I'm just going to vamp for a second here. But the two, what is it, Katie Goodman and...
Greta Morgan.
Katie Goodman of Vivian Girls, right?
Indeed.
Indeed. I'm doing this all by memory because I do not have the story in front of me. Hold on a sec. A pair of people that John really likes. There we go. Katie Goodman and Greta Morgan. Katie, of course, of Vivian Girls, of La Sera, Greta Morgan of Springtime Carnivore. They've teamed up to release a punk covers LP. They're covering pretty much their classics. They're covering stuff by Bad Brains, The Stooges, The Misfits, and way more. The album's going to be called Take It, It's Yours, and it comes out on August 26th via Polyvinyl Records. There is a song streaming from this right now. It is a cover of the Replacements' anthem, Bastards of Young. You can go find that on Punk News. It'll be linked up with the show notes for this episode. They're also covering, where's the track list? Here it is. The Wipers, Three Gun Club, Buzzcocks, The Stooges, The Jam, Blondie, Billy Idol. So, you know, lots of cool stuff that they're covering on this. This is a super chilled out cover of Bastards of Young, John.
Indeed.
I mean, and this is a song that I think anyone that ever covers it wants it because they just kind of like want to scream it. So what do you think? What do you think of this? Wait, because you're always a big booster of what Vivian Girls and La Sera have been doing. This had some mixed reaction, I think, from the punk news crowd, maybe because it's so, you know, so relaxed.
Well, good point, Let me be Mr. Positive, and then I will defend. This is going to be cool. This is going to be real cool. The fundamental point of this is twofold. First, it's to show how fundamentally well crafted these songs are. Second, it's to show the skill and talent of these two young ladies singing. And actually, Katie Goodman and Greta Morgan pairing together works exceptionally well because Greta Morgan has got this low, sultry voice, and Katie Goodman has this high, soaring kind of church choir voice. So that they sing in almost sort of an Andrew Sisters type cadence, you know, music from the 30s, music from the 40s, or maybe you can also think of it as the Carter family, June Carter, and I forget the name of the other Carters because I'm a poser when it comes to, I'm a huge Johnny Cash fan, but I don't know anything about country music. But anyways, they're phenomenal singers, so when they do these covers, they will be radical changes that will show how good they are at arrangements and how good they are playing off each other, the beauty of both of their voices, as well as to show how great of a songwriter the Buzzcocks are, how great of a songwriter Glenn Danzig is, that you can convert their songs into any format and give them a beautiful presentation no matter how you create them or record them. Here's my counterattack. People had two complaints. People were like, yeah, they just picked the most obvious stuff. And yeah, this is kind of like, low tempo. How come whenever Frank Turner covers friggin' Third Eye Blind, people are like, oh, it's so great. It's so meaningful. Frank Turner's covering Third Eye Blind. That's bullshit. Here, we have a radical, unexpected cover of classic punk cuts done in an interesting style. This is interesting, not Frank Turner covering Third Eye Blind. Give me a break. Or Oasis. Second, people were like, it's so low tempo. They're like, somebody said this record's not necessary. Well, what record's necessary? There's no such thing as a record that's necessary. Is this supposed to be the defining moment of any of their careers? No. What this is supposed to be is an interesting record that you're supposed to enjoy and just get out of it, something, I guess, temporary or just enjoy it for what it is. And the fact that they're doing these songs in a very, kind of June Carter Cash style is the point of it, that they're taking these hard songs and making them gentle and beautiful. And it's wonderful and excellent, and this record will be great.
John, I'm feeling the love.
That's a convincing sales pitch. I wish I would have listened to it.
I'm interested to hear this because, I'm a huge Vivian Girls fan. This particular cover didn't blow me away, but, if only because I came and I listened to this like a few days after getting back from that Big Replacements cover show that I've been talking about. So I'm all hopped up on Matt stuff and not quiet Matt stuff. So I'll circle back to it, and I'm sure I'll enjoy it more because I quite like a lot of the things that they do. John, speaking of stuff that I like, this is great. I came out of the blue, did not know this was happening. I'm so curious to see what this actually is. But so Chicks Dig It, Calgary punk band, released lots of stuff on Honest Dawns back when that Fat imprint had existed, released stuff on Sub Pop, or later released stuff on Fat Wreck. One of the really during a very dry point in, in Canadian punk that anyone had heard, they had they were the standard bearers for a while. So anyway, so it is the 25th anniversary of Chicks Dig It. They have announced a tour, first of all, where they're going to go out and play a bunch of shows. They're playing two shows in Toronto at the Bovine Sex Club. That is going to be super cool, and I'm going to be at least one of them. John, do you have any idea what the Bovine Sex Club is?
I know it's a famous punk club. It's been around for a long time. Diego Abortions have played there many times. Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah. So the Bovine is it is sort of amazing. If you have to look this thing up on the internet, there, the exterior of the Bovine is basically a bunch of steel garbage that has been welded to the front of a building. It just looks like a jumble of like old bicycles and chains and other garbage, and it's fascinating. And then when you go inside the Bovine, there's like doll parts hanging from the roof, and it's like completely black and just full of like various creepy weirdness. But the Bovine's amazing. I've actually seen KJ Jansen, the singer from Chicks Dig It, play a solo thing there once years ago. And anyways, so yeah, so the Bovine is an amazing weird club. It is totally where you want to go see a punk band play because it is so fucking weird. I don't know, what can I say about the Bovine? It's one of these places where if you walk by it on the street and you are not aware of what this thing is, it is somewhere that you are scared of. Anyways, though, so Chicks Dig It's playing two shows there. They're playing all over. They're kind of trying to go coast to coast in Canada. So they're playing stuff in Ottawa, London, Victoria, BC, Vancouver, BC, Regina, Winnipeg, Saskatoon. It doesn't look like they are getting, or Edmonton. It does not look like they're getting any further east than Ottawa on here. So anyways, East Coast people should come to these shows. But that's not all. So Chicks Dig It's doing 20th anniversary tour. They're also putting out a new record that I had heard nothing about until now. The album is called 2012, which is a Rush riff. If you've seen the art for it, it's doing the Rush thing. They are saying it is a single song They're calling it the longest punk song ever recorded, and it chalks in at under 25 minutes long. I'm sure that's wrong. I'm sure, like, I don't know, like, the fucking, like, UK Subhumans or someone has recorded, like, a big giant song.
At Excellent. At Cradle to the Grave, 23 minutes. Yes, Sir, I Will by Crass, 48 minutes.
There you go. But anyways, it's their 25th. We'll give them some loosey-goosiness on the facts here. But anyways, though, so they're releasing some form of a record that has a big giant song on it of some sort, and that's exciting. It's gonna be the first thing that they've released since the EP Safeways Here We Come, which came out in 2011 on Fat. And then before that, like, the last actual full length that they had was, oh god, was years ago. I'm not even sure off the top of my head when that was at this point, but so new Chicks Dig It stuff, that's exciting. Pink Razors was the one that came out before that. I still don't know the year, so I don't know why I'm mentioning it, just to show my ignorance of these things. So that's cool. I'm stoked. I really want to go see this. They were when I was growing up and getting into punk, a hugely important band for me. Just one of those bands that really created the idea that I'm still chasing, where I'm not just into punk music and that I'm into, you know, music that I'm hearing out of LA or New York. But I'm into punk music, and I've, you know, and the people from my country are doing this, right? So they were a big band for me, just in terms of getting into independent Canadian music as a Canadian. So yeah, much love for Chicks Dig It. This will be cool. So there you go.
I'm loving the Rush reference. Wasn't there like a Canadian band like a year ago that also did a Rush reference, a 2112 reference? Was that Chicks Dig It? I'm having total deja vu on this.
I'm trying to think who else would have done.
Like, who's the other big like Canadian pop punk band from about this era?
From the Chicks Dig It era? I don't know. I mean, like, there was a lot of like super shitty Canadian pop punk bands that showed up, you know, in the post Blink-182 age, where you had bands like Sum 41 and Simple Plan and things like that that were
really maybe wasn't a Canadian, maybe it was just a band that referenced 2112. I'm having to this, like, the, remember that song I Like Sex and Candy? You remember that song?
Yes. Okay.
I heard it on the radio and I'm like, oh man, I remember the song from 4 years ago. And then the radio guy says, like, that's the new hit out this week, Sex and Candy by Marcy Playground. And I was totally tripped out. I'm like, I know I heard this song 4 years ago, but it just came out this week. I don't know, man.
Maybe isn't that song like 15 years old?
It's 15 years
old. Well, it is now. No, this wasn't yesterday.
Oh, okay, okay. You're totally fucking up my head. And I'm like, what?
No, this was like 15 years ago. Like, when it first came out, they're like, you know, I heard like the second half of it. I'm like, oh, man, I remember this song from 4 years ago. And the DJ was like, this just came out this week. And I'm like, what? So maybe you have a premonition
for like
I don't know who else had the recent.
Well, listen, listeners, tell me. Well, the listeners won't even know. But listeners, if there was like a pop punk band,
fuck, no. Now I'm remembering it, because there was a band that released a song about Rush. Do you remember this?
That's it. So
love song about Rush. I'm sure if we search punk news for Rush,
it wasn't like Teenage Bottle Rock. It sounds like something they would do.
Oh, who else this now?
I thought I was going insane. All right, at least we're on to something.
You are completely right. Let's see. Nerve Herder.
If they're from Kid.
Nerve Herder.
Yes. Earlier this year, you posted the story. They had a song that came out called The Girl Who Listened to Rush.
That's it.
There we go. Anyways, problem solved. I'm sure when he's mixing this show, Greg is going to be screaming at us because he's a Nerve Herder fan.
No, I was mad about Greg because I wanted him to play that song because it's got, like, the actual song has a lot of Rush homages in it, but he didn't play it.
So, there you go. Okay, yeah, anyways, Rush, Canada, Chicks Dig It. It's great. go listen to those things.
Neil Young, Tragedy Hit, Rush.
Let's break for a song. John, I'm going to pull something out of the magic bag here, unless you have a particular thing that you want to play.
Well, I think we have the same magic bag song, so do we have the same magic bag song here, Adam?
You're not going to play what I'm going to play, because it's totally random. I stared at my screen for a minute, and it popped into my head.
Okay, so, by all means, Adam, give
the
spin.
This is the title track from the 2000... era, or the year 2000 release. I'm not sure. It's easy to say like the 1996 record, but you say like the 2000 record and it sounds weird. Anyways, the record from the year 2000 by street punk band The Forgotten. This is Keep the Corpses Quiet, which was the title track off that record, which is awesome and still rips. So anyways, for no reason at all, this is The Forgotten playing Keep the Corpses Quiet.
That was a random track that Adam White pulled out of nowhere. They're forgotten doing Keep the Corpses Quiet. There you go. And a lot of random tracks on tonight's podcast. Let's see. We got a lot more to talk about. Let's just, you guys want to keep this first one for next week maybe?
Yeah, we'll go back to that one.
All right, how about this one then? AJJ.
Actress January.
For JJ?
Always just jerking. They're releasing their new album. It's called The Bible 2. And I definitely have a love-hate relationship with this band. I love the last album. The new album's coming out August 19 on Side 1 Dummy. Not a whole lot of people were surprised about that. The album was released through like one of these social media things where they released little details on different people's Twitters and Facebooks. I told everyone, like, all right, they're putting out a new album. And they announced the album, The Bible 2, which I think is a funny title. Tom Trauma, are you excited for AJJ's new album? Do you like AJJ? Did you check out the last album, Christmas Island?
No. What was
it? Okay, Tom is dead.
He's overwhelmed. Adam White, how are you? What's your
It's not my thing.
I think that this is my favorite title of an album that I've heard in a long time. I wasn't quite sure where I've stood on this band since they renamed themselves. if only because, and if you come back to the story, I felt that I still feel that their excuse was so weak. For not trying to offend anyone or for whatever the reason for not being Andrew Jackson Jihad was so it was clearly written by committee and then overwritten and then prepared and then munged around and then completely unnecessary. But in any case, I liked Christmas Island. It did not stick with me to the degree that I think a lot of people it did, and that's probably my fault more than that record, because if I go by everyone that I know, everyone loves it. So, I should probably revisit that one. But in any case, The Bible 2 is such an amazing title that I am automatically excited about this. There is something that just The Bible 2, John.
Here's a question, though. I used to be able to, like, often, it seems to me in punk rock, people almost always want the bands they like to have the exact same political opinions and social opinions they do. I used to not care about that whatsoever. I used to listen to tons of bands that have the exact opposite opinions I do. The older I get, the more annoyed I am about bands that have different ideas about certain things, which is probably a failing on my part. How come it's okay for them to make fun of Christianity, but they can't comment on what some people would perceive as commentary on Islam?
Hey, if it was called the Quran, too?
I mean, that's interesting that they got away from the one religious reference only to leap right into another religious reference. I didn't even think of that, actually. That is interesting. We don't know if they're making fun of Christianity.
Well, fair enough, fair enough.
I certainly don't think they're holding it sacred.
Sufjan Stevens. Maybe it'll be an honest-to-God Christian rock record. We'll see.
well, I wasn't saying that, but hey, who knows? Yeah, it's like, that is absolutely a valid point. I did not think about that. Maybe they maybe they were cool with the religious thing, but they didn't want to offend Andrew Jackson.
they could have changed the name to Andrew Jackson Crusade.
I really do have a love-hate relationship with this band because I really did like Christmas Island a lot. I loved how dark and how weird it was. But they just do so much stuff that just annoys me, you know? But is that my falling or is it theirs, you know? I'm not sure. And what do you do in that situation, you know? I mean, he's a great artist, and that's why I keep coming back to them, but he does a lot of stuff that annoys me, but I keep coming back, you know?
This is why bands should release lots of EPs, and then they can use each EP to be annoying in a different way, and then you can cherry pick the ones that that fit your personal tastes.
I actually had something pretty aggressive to say about AJJ, but I won't say it because I don't want to start a battle, but also I think he's doing what he does because actually, I don't even know if that's true or not. But listen, I like the band. I think they're talented, and I'm just going to have to learn to relearn what I knew 10 years ago, that you can thoroughly enjoy a band even if you completely disagree with what the band's messages are. That being said, Tom Trom, are you there?
I'm here. I'm going to
hang up on
so,
Tom Trom and recall.
I am
meantime,
so ignorant.
Adam, why don't you tell the listeners about this Baron Mary song that we debuted?
Yeah, so this was a 4th of July thing that we did here. So for those of you that don't know, the 4th of July is an America thing.
I'm back. Did you hang up on me, John?
I did, and now you're back.
Don't make me Freddie Madball. You can come over there and smack you around a little bit.
Tom, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks. I'm totally indifferent to the band. I don't have any dislike of them or anything, but all I can think every time I hear is vajayjay. Do you ever hear the guys in the street use that particular slang term for a woman's private parts? Their name sounds like a slang term for a woman's private parts.
See, this is why AJJ
hates... Hi, we're
vajayjay. This is why AJJ hates us, Tom.
Well, I didn't say anything bad about their band. I'm too ignorant about them to make any pointed remarks.
You're being insensitive.
It's just not my thing, you know? It's just not my thing.
Anyways, we're talking about the Baron...
Now those guys I like.
So anyways, yeah, this is something you like. So
their name is pretty stupid too, but I like them.
And they have an exclamation mark in their name, which is
they
that's
do
annoying when you're ty- that's annoying when you're typing.
Do they?
Yes.
Or is that just our writing of it? That's just this article that I'm writing. I'm sorry, the Baron Marys. I didn't want to make you one of those punctuation bands.
Actually, it's not a horrible name because it's got a nice onomatopoeia going.
I'm not a fan of adjective noun in bands' names. Not a fan.
Really? I mean, like 90% of bands are, you know, Black Sabbath, John.
Well, that's a good
adjective
name.
But
anyways,
can I interject just one more thing real quick? because John, you were talking about when we get a press release, whether or not it gets run has a lot to do with blah, 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 blah. You know, and the fact of the matter is we get these bands presented to us to review and all of us reviewers. And if a band has a retarded name, it's just, you know what I mean? It just gets so... Pick a good name, kids. Pick a good name for your
name. Adam White, Tom Trom is just sailing us up the negative PC river, isn't he, this evening? But actually, this band is actually a band that reached out to me in the exact... Not in, this band.
It's a cool song. I dig
this band reached out to me, and I said, this is cool, let's run it. I'm sorry, Adam White, go ahead.
So, yeah, anyways... what? Where are we? Anyway, okay, so the Baron Marys, they are a band. They gave us a song. The song is called Uncle Fester. It compares Donald Trump to... Uncle Fester, so you can go check it out. The video is super fun. It has lots of goofy kind of like cut up Trump things that are in it. If you like fun straight up early Ramones dictators, that kind of stuff, you're gonna like this. So anyways, this is the Baron Marys, their song Uncle Fester. a song about Donald Trump. One of many, many punk songs about Donald Trump that we are going to probably have to deal with in the next little while.
I hope not, man. I hope not.
It's an example of a video that probably cost very, very little money, but it was really cool.
It's super fun.
Because sometimes these bands spend a ton of money and make horrible videos, but you can make a cool video cheap if you're, you know, a little imagination, kids.
This song is just like a really fun song. I just thought it was a cool song, and that's the only reason I wanted to talk about it. I thought it's an amusing, great song.
Yeah, so anyways, go to punknews.org. You can check this out. And there's a video and everything there. And you really, really, you really should go look at it with the video. That's important. So yeah, that's the Bearing Murrays. What else do we got here, John? There was a crime ring.
Oh, this is pretty interesting. And this is not specifically punk related, although some punk musicians were listed were involved in this. Is 130 people were arrested in Houston as part of a music gear theft ring. And what happens is 130 people, they would specifically target public events with a focus on music performances. And then while people were inside the venue or whatever, they would steal the equipment from outside. They stole a 15-passenger van. They stole, you know, tons of band gear. They stole a lot of vans. They even stole an entire line of motorcycles, which I don't know why a touring band had a line of motorcycles, but they stole like 20 motorcycles.
Must have been like Motley Crue.
I mean, it probably was, honestly, something like that. So anyways, the DA, they finally caught them. What the people would do is they would sell them. The weird thing is that there was no system for selling the items. They would actually steal these items and then just sell them person to person, or they would ship them down to Mexico and sell them that way. So 150 people were arrested. 200 charges have been filed. The DA is also going to arrest more people. And I guess this is just good. I don't know if there's anything to take from this. Don't steal stuff, people. I don't know.
Look out for one another, especially at these punk shows where there's just stuff stacked in the corners. And
yeah, it's real bad these days. Well,
You go to a house show. I know you go to house shows, John. You go to a house show, there's just stuff all over. Just be cool. And keep it, you know, if you see somebody doing something shady.
I think most of the theft was actually van theft outside the venue is what
how many times have we run stories like that? It happens. I mean, Houston is horrible. Detroit's horrible.
San Francisco. You
know. Yeah.
Tom, are you weed whacking or
sanding?
No, it's my computer's cooling fan. I have a diesel computer. We're in Michigan. Everything's bigger and, you know, tougher.
That's a good reason. All right, John, let's kill this thing. You got another song?
Yeah, let's play. I want to play something just completely random. Something that here we go. Actually, I probably shouldn't play that. I'm gonna play something that I will play a song.
You're thinking too much about making this random.
Come on, play another Madball song.
No, I don't play Madball.
Second Madball song.
But I will play an interesting track. Here we go. I'm going to play a Junior Mervin track. Who's Junior Mervin? Junior Mervin is a reggae singer that recorded with Lee Perry, Mikey Dread, and a whole bunch of other people. This is a song called Bad Man Posse. And this is dedicated to the theft ring that stole all those items. This is Bad Man Posse off the very rare Bad Man Posse album. On vocals, Junior Mervin, produced by Mikey Dread. Let's check it out. So stay away from the wrong master. Please stay away. Don't go inside. You have a bad man passing. You have a good man passing. You have a Rasta man passing. You have a rootsman posse. Which one you want to be, sir? Pick your choice. So many men lost their lives in assembly because of the wrong posse. Some things are right, things are wrong. Please don't let your mom and daddy down. This is a lesson to all you time. Keep a cool head and stay away from the wrong posse. Stay away from the wrong posse. You have a bad man posse. You have a good man posse. You have a Rasta man posse. You have a roots man posse. Which one you want to be, son? Pick your choice.
You have the good man passing. You have the Rasta man passing. You have the roots man passing. Which one you want to be, son? Pick your choice. So many men lost their lives innocently because of the wrong one passing. Sunday's a right, things are wrong. Please don't let your mom and daddy down. This is a lesson to all you men. Stay away from the wrong one passing. Stay away from the wrong passing. It's too faulty.
And we are back, and that was episode 306. We had our yucks, we had our conflicts, we had our obscure tunage.
We had our recording problems.
We did. It was a classic Pungus podcast. No organization, terrible recording. We argued, we called people out, we almost got ourselves in trouble. That's Pungus. Tom Trauma, is this how we do?
I would like to take this time to formally apologize to anyone whose feelings I may have hurt over the course of this podcast.
Well, there you have it.
I would like to take this time to
grow some thick skin.
Yeah, I'd like to take this time to formally apologize to Greg Simpson when you have to edit this podcast, because it's probably not going to be super fun to do so, and I keep not thanking you for doing it. So, thanks, Greg.
You're the best, Greg. We love you.
I hate you, Greg. That's it.
That's good.
Will he leave that or will he edit it?